Shripad Paramaham Sakari Raja Gacharya Ashtavita Rashukta Shri Shri Madhavai Charna Ravinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna. What's the chapter number?
870.
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We get to read from Canto 2, Chapter 8, Text 17. And I wanted to acknowledge that so many of you are here every morning, and I appreciate that you let me come in, even though I'm just once in a while, you let me speak. You're here every day, and that's really big. And also, everybody that's online watching too. Yesterday I saw there were over 100 people, and I heard that there used to be more interaction with the online, and so if you want to ask a question, I think you just post it as a note on YouTube. Are you monitoring? Okay, Roddy Case is on the job. And I'm going to be asking some questions, so we want some input from people around the world. People around the world are watching you, and some of them say they have names for each of us in here. Oh, she's the one that does this, and there's the conch shell lady, and so when they came to visit here, it was like seeing TV stars move. Wow, there's the one that smiles all the time. So this is the Hare Krishna show, and we want to have some interaction with your fans. Oh, thank you. Okay, so text 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yugani Yugamanam Cha.
Dharmayascha yuge yuge.
Avataranucharitam.
Yad ascharyatamam hare.
Yugani yugamanam cha.
Dharmayascha yuge yuge.
Avataranucharitam.
Yad ascharyatamam hare.
Yugani yugamanam cha.
Yuge yuge,
Dharmayascha yuge yuge,
Avataranucharitam.
Yugani, the different ages. Yugamanam, the duration of each age. Cha, as well as dharma, the particular occupational duty. Yacha, and which. Juge, juge, in each and every yuga or particular age. Avatara, the incarnation. Anucharitam, and the activities of the incarnation. Yat, which, ascharyatamam, the most wonderful activities. Hare, of the Supreme Lord. Translation, please explain all the different ages in the duration of the creation, and also the duration of such ages. Also tell me about the different activities of the different incarnations of the Lord in three ages. Serve one together. Please explain all the different ages in the duration of the creation, and also the duration of such ages. Also tell me about the different activities and of the different incarnations of the Lord in different ages. Ascharyatamam. So what's another verse that has that word, ascharya? Anybody? We'll let you think about it.
Second chapter.
Yeah. And what's it describing?
Soul.
The soul. Some look on the soul as ascharya. Anyone remember how that one goes? Yeah, purusha something enam. Yeah. All right, so ascharyatamam. So the most wonderful activities of Hare. So how many things in this question? These are all the questions of Maharaj Pariksit. There's so many questions. He piles them all up. Usually when there's a question creates some tension. It's a hook. It hooks you in like, yeah, that's a good question. And it hooks you, and like, what's the answer going to be? And that tension causes you to pay attention to the answer. But here we got a whole chapter full of questions, and they're just piled one on top of the next, and oh, that's a good question, that's a good question. And where are these going to be answered throughout the rest of the Bhagavatam, and how to keep track of these? Someone sent me a document. I tried looking it up. I can't find it. But some devotee has spent the time documenting each of the questions in the Bhagavatam and where they are answered. And there's a lot of work that went into that because I've tried to figure that out. Where are these questions going to be answered? Please explain the different ages in the duration of the creation. Okay, what are the different ages? I'm thinking like way in the 12th canto that gets addressed. What are the qualities of the different ages? And also the duration of such ages. Okay, that gets discussed in the third canto. Also tell me about the different activities of the different incarnations of the Lord in different ages. Okay, that's kind of spread throughout the Bhagavatam. All right, so now we've got some hooks in, we've got some questions. Where are these directed? Where are these going to be answered? And purport. Let's see what Srila Prabhupada says about this verse. He mostly focuses on, well, we'll see. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all the incarnations of the Supreme Lord, although non-different from him, are emanations from the Supreme. What's he referring to there? And pundits want to throw out the shloka. I'll read it again. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all the incarnations of the Supreme Lord, although non-different from him, are emanations from the Supreme. Anybody?
Which are most powerful of the same.
I would say he's referring to the one where Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. How does that one start? Ete Changsha Kala Pungsha Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Riddayanti Yuge Yuge. So I'll read that sentence again. We can take each sentence here and unpack it and expand it. Okay, the first sentence of the purport again. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all the incarnations of the Supreme Lord, although non-different from him, are emanations from the Supreme. Maharaj Pariksit inquired from the great and learned sage Shukadeva Goswami about the different activities of such incarnations so that the incarnation of the Lord might be confirmed by his activities in the authoritative scriptures. Maharaj Pariksit was not to be carried away by the sentiments of the common man to accept an incarnation of the Lord very cheaply. Instead, he wished to accept the incarnation of the Lord by symptoms mentioned in the Vedic literatures and confirmed by an acharya like Shukadeva Goswami. Okay, that seems to us, because we've been reading this for so long, it would seem, why would anyone do that? Why would anyone accept an incarnation cheaply? It's because we keep reading and hearing what Prabhupada says about this, the fallacy of accepting someone easily as an incarnation. We've heard all of the arguments, and yet, even in our own society, it happened, and Prabhupada was furious about it. Some of the devotees said, Prabhupada is God, and he kicked them out. Although they were sannyasis, it was a big stir, and he dealt with them very severely, and they were sincere devotees. He made it clear, we don't want that. But in practically all spiritual organizations, the leader has some spiritual shakti, gets respect from the followers. It starts going to his head, or even her head. There are women. Where we came from in Rutherfordton, there's a Christian church that's made the news by, anyway, a Word of Faith church. Wow, it's pretty heavy. They got some unpleasant things going on there, and it's a woman that heads it up. So it's not just women that do that. I mean, not just men that fall into this, although typically that's what happens. Goes to their head, people praise them, they believe it, and then they lose all of their discretion, lose their integrity. So I'll read that last sentence again. Maharaj Pariksit was not to be carried away by the sentiments of the common man to accept an incarnation of the Lord very cheaply. Instead, he wished to accept the incarnation of the Lord by symptoms mentioned in the Vedic literatures and confirmed by an acharya like Shukadeva Goswami. The Lord descends by his internal energy without any obligation to the laws of material nature, and thus his activities are also uncommon. So now he's addressing that word in the Sanskrit, ascharyatamam. This is why the most wonderful activities, ascharyatamam, this is why his activities are uncommon, because he descends by his internal energy without any obligation to the laws of material nature, and thus his activities are also uncommon. And same with our potential as a living being, as that Bhagavad Gita verse says, some look on the soul as ascharyavat purusham. That's as far as we're getting today. Oh, thank you. Ascharyavat pashyati kashchidenam. How's the rest of it, though? Do you have it?
Some look at his soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, some hear him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, don't understand at all.
All right. Some hear of him Some hear of him as amazing. Some see him as amazing. Him, I mean, the soul. What was the third one?
Describe
it as amazing. And some, while others, yes, because it's inconceivable. We are a tiny little bit of Krishna's energy. And in one sense, I was thinking about this, how someone deep into meditation and spiritual understanding, when you get in touch with your spiritual self and you see this, ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam, how the spiritual shakti of the soul is amazing and inconceivable, then the obvious conclusion is, I must be God. And in a sense, we are, just as heat and light are the characteristics of fire. If we see heat and light, we know there's a fire somewhere. There's little tiny fires burning in these light bulbs that are putting out light. Unless they're LED, I'm not quite sure how that works, but let's just run with this, that heat and light is produced by fire. How can you separate? If you see a fire that has no heat or light, how can it be a fire? So Krishna, without the Shakti, there's no such thing. When we say Krishna, when Krishna is here, automatically it's understood the Shakti is also here. That is, okay, whole other tangent. We're not going to go there. So in a sense, when there's fire, when there's heat, we can say there's fire. The heat is fire, but it is something different. We are the Shakti of Krishna. So in a sense, we're non-different from Krishna. And so that's why achintya is that inconceivable word again. Achintya, bheda, abheda, tattva. The truth is that everything is Krishna and everything is not Krishna. And there is a distinction between an avatar of Krishna. So when the full potency comes there, the source of the Shakti, that is something very different. We are emanations from the potency. Shakti, Shakti, how does that go? Shakti, Shakti, Mator, Abheda. How does that one go?
Shakti, Shakti, Matayor.
Matayor. I left off one syllable. Shakti, Shakti, Matayor, Abheda. So the Shakti, the energy, the source of the Shakti, Abheda. There's no difference. And yet, we are not incarnations. And yet, we are. Usually when there's a long explanation of the incarnations of Krishna, it goes into a whole thing. There are the, what's the two terms now? The ones that are fully Krishna and the ones that are partially Krishna. What are those two categories?
Kala
and Swangsha. Okay, yeah, Swangsha. That is one of the ones. Swa Angsha, his own. Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking of. Vibin Angsha. Okay. Swang Angsha and Vibin. And then Vibin Angsha. And Vibhinamsha, that's what we are. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Vibhina means different.
Yes, Swa means own. Vibhina means different. Okay, good. The more we talk about this, the more it makes sense. I still have a little bit left in the purport. The Lord descends by his internal energy without any obligation to the laws of nature. Okay, so we are, because we are Vibhinamsha, we are subject to the external energy. Krishna as Swamsha, he's never affected by the laws of nature. Thus, his activities are uncommon. And if a living entity is fully in touch with Krishna, fully dedicated to Krishna, has made all of their desires, has made all of Krishna's desires, their desires, they become empowered. Shakti Avesh. They're given the full potency, and then their activities also become uncommon. And the purports Prabhupada writes about Narada Muni in the first canto, talks about freedom. Narada Muni is free just to wander. He's free from the influence of the laws of nature. After speaking to Vyasadeva, he just disappeared. Normal living beings can't do that, but Narada Muni can. And Prabhupada gives us beautiful purport about freedom, and then he says the whole thing, bhakti, the entire process of bhakti hinges on freedom. We are free to take it up or not take it up, and even if we do take it up, bhakti is free whether to give herself to us or not to. And Ghanashyam was talking about that yesterday. He was saying, how did he say that? We go through everything on our side, and then we have to wait for Krishna to... Then he had a couple of Sanskrit words that we're talking about. Krishna bestowing his mercy upon us, and we get insights. And if we are totally surrendered, then we get that all the time, and that's what Narada was saying. When he had his first episode of getting a glimpse of Krishna, he struggled to get that vision back again. Then he heard the voice. Krishna said, I've done this just to increase your attachment to me, and I regret to tell you, you're not going to see me in this life, but just keep doing what you're doing. And he did. And so he says, now, he's speaking to Vyasadeva, he says, now, when I say the name of Krishna, he immediately sits on my heart as if he's my servant. I just call for him, and there he is. All I have to do is say his name, and he's there with me. So that's the potential of the Atma, the Ashcharya, Ashcharyavat Pashyati Enam. Some see the potential of every being. Some see their own potential, and they act upon it. Bhakti Yoga will take us to that platform. So the specific activities of the Lord are mentioned, and one should know that the activities of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical due to being on the absolute plane. Okay, now this is the last two sentences of the purport. Prabhupada brings in something else. Because the Lord is on the absolute plane, the Lord and his activities are non-different. And Prabhupada's going to say, therefore, to hear the activities of the Lord means to associate with the Lord directly. And association with the Lord directly means purification from material contamination. We have already discussed this point in the previous volume. So now here's my question. What does he mean by previous volume? If he means the previous chapter, there's several points there, or he means the previous... the second canto was printed in two volumes, so it could have meant the second canto part one, or it could mean the first canto, but it seemed like you had something, or did you?
Well, I was thinking in the first canto, Prabhupada talks about the whole description of the incarnations, so the activities of the Lord are described in the first canto.
All right, so...
Yes,
one suggestion is in the first canto there's the list of the incarnations, could be referring to that. Also, in the second canto we just read through a list of incarnations. I'll read this again and then let's see if anybody online has some ideas, because it could be anywhere what he means by volume. Previous canto. All right. But who wrote that? I mean, like, do they know for sure? Like, do they have insight? I mean, I know, but it's still there. Okay, previous canto. All right, so I hope they had some insight. Or, yeah, we have this version, and the one I read this morning, let's see, do I have, I forget when mine was printed. Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, but still, with Prabhupada, it could mean so many things. The previous chapter, there was the very last verse goes into some things. I'll read the last three sentences again. The specific activities of the Lord are mentioned, and one should know that the activities of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical due to being on the absolute plane. Thus, to hear the activities of the Lord means to associate with the Lord directly. An association with the Lord directly means purification from material contamination. We have already discussed this point in the previous volume, canto, whatever book you're reading. And the points he's talking about is hearing about the Lord, hearing the activities of the Lord means to associate with the Lord directly. Association with the Lord directly means purification from material contamination. So that point, I would say, or has anyone said anything online?
Not yet.
Okay, come on online people. I have an idea what he's talking about. And it would be those verses that he quoted in the song that he wrote in the Jaladutta about hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Starting with
divinity and divine service. 1, 2. Divinity and divine service.
Yes. Second chapter. Starting, and what's the first one? Is it Nasta Praesho Vadrishu or Srimbatam Swakata Krishna? What's the first?
When you start.
All right. So I'll just say that's if it's the previous canto, then that's what he's referring to. If it's the previous volume, I would say, etanyavidyamanam ichchatam makuto bhayam yoginam nirpanirnitam harinamanukirtanam, that is the doubtless and fearless path for everyone, no matter what your goals are. Yoginam nirpanirnitam harinamanukirtanam. So originally, Parikshit Maharaj is first questions, there's like at the end of the first canto. Does any pundits here know what those are? There's like 4 or 5, maybe 6 of them. Prabhupada usually refers to one in particular. Anybody? He's saying, now I'm on the verge of death. What is the duty of everyone, specifically someone who's about to die? What should I hear about? What should I meditate upon? What practice should I do, and what things should I avoid? I think there's 6 things. So the second canto, he starts speaking. Here's what you should meditate upon. First of all, he says, your questions are really good. Normal people don't ask questions like this. Your questions are really good. Here's what you should meditate upon. Here's how you should do it. Here's what you should avoid. All right, and there are some other things I wanted to read about this last couple sentences are so similar to in the Krishna book, chapter 7, the Trinavarta demon story. There are 3 paragraphs in a row where Prabhupada just talks about the glories of hearing. And they're so good that when we read them in our group, we memorized this one sentence, which I will read. Hearing, and it's just so similar to what we see here. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve one's transcendental nature, simply by hearing. That's one sentence. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve one's transcendental nature, simply by hearing. And it's so similar to what we read here. Thus, to hear the activities of the Lord means to associate with the Lord directly. An association with the Lord directly means purification from material contamination. So Prabhupada's repeated theme throughout the Bhagavatam, the previous canto, the previous chapter, the previous volume, in the Krishna book, everywhere else. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. So, because of that story that Mukhya read yesterday about the six-year-old boy getting the Krishna book, did everyone hear that story? I'll repeat it, because some folks probably missed it. And I'll probably get a couple details wrong, but six-year-old boy went to some swap meet, he brought some jewelry, and he traded it, he got a Krishna book. And he came home, he fell in love with the book, and the pictures, and he read from it. A six-year-old boy, is that right? Was he six? It's really fun getting kids to read the Krishna book. It increases their vocabulary, and they get pretty good at it at a surprising young age. He went to church, Unitarian Universalist Church, which is nice and open, and he shared the book for show and tell. And the teacher of the class also loved the book, and she said, could I borrow this? But then the next week when he went to church, she wasn't there. She just disappeared. We don't know what happened to her. That's the mystery. She went off and joined the traveling Sankirtan party or something. And this story came in through Krishna.com. Somebody bought a Krishna book recently, and the devotees at Krishna.com had to call this person up because the address wasn't working out, had to confirm the address. So they got the right address, and the mother said, there's a story about why I'm getting this. So then she told that whole story. My son, at the age of six, got the book. It disappeared. We've been looking for that book, and finally, I found you online. And so now I get to give it to him for his birthday present on his 22nd birthday. Took her that long to find us? I mean, how come we're not out on the street saying, here's my Krishna book? So she got it. I hope it's similar to the volume that he got. You know, when you're a kid, you get that, you know, you're seeing the same pictures, and then there's a whole tactile thing, a big silver Krishna book. So, in this Krishna book, let's see, where is it? Where is it? I thought I'd put a bookmark in there. Oh, here we go. Everybody's favorite fake incarnation of Krishna, the deliverance of Pondraka and the king of Kashi. So, I'm going to read. Pay attention, class. Get out the hot milk. The story of King Pondraka is very interesting because there have always been many rascals and fools who have considered themselves to be God. Even in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, there was such a foolish person. His name was Pondraka, and he wanted to declare himself to be God. While Lord Balaram was absent in Vrindavan, this King Pondraka, the king of the Karusha province, being foolish and puffed up, sent a messenger to Lord Krishna. Balaram visited Vrindavan, stayed there for some time. Pondraka thought, oh, now's my chance. Now I can attack Krishna. He was afraid of Balaram. He thought this would be an opportunity. In the Bhagavatam, the verses say that the followers of Pondraka flattered him and convinced him that he was God. So he listened to him. He was foolish enough to hear them out. That's one little detail Prabhupada leaves out in the Krishna book. Lord Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and King Pondraka directly challenged Krishna through the messenger, who stated that Pondraka and not Krishna was Vasudev. In the present day, there are many foolish followers of such rascals. Similarly, in his day, many foolish men accepted Pondraka as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because He could not estimate his own position. Pandraka falsely thought himself to be Lord Vasudeva. Thus the messenger declared to Krishna that out of his causeless mercy, King Pandraka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had descended on the earth just to deliver all distressed persons. Surrounded by many other foolish persons, this rascal Pandraka had actually concluded that he was Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This kind of conclusion is certainly childish. When children are playing, they sometimes create a king among themselves, and the child who is so selected thinks that he is the king. Similarly, many foolish persons, due to ignorance, select another fool as God, and then the rascal considers himself God, as if God could be created by childish play or by the votes of men. Under this false impression, thinking himself the Supreme Lord, Pandraka sent his messenger to Dwaraka to challenge the position of Krishna. The messenger reached the royal assembly of Krishna in Dwaraka and conveyed the message given by his master Pandraka. The message contained the following statements. Okay, so here, getting a chance to hear about Krishna, which means what? Purification. And what was before that?
Association.
Yeah, just by hearing about Krishna, get to associate with Krishna. And association with Krishna means?
Evolving.
Evolve your transcendental nature. That's what he says in the Krishna book. And here, what did it say?
Purification.
Yeah, let's see. Yes.
From material.
Association with the Lord directly means purification from material contamination. So, I'm giving you a chance here. Even if somebody like me reads, these are Prabhupada's words. All right, so here is Pandraka's statement delivered to Krishna in the assembly. So the poor messenger. I am the only Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. There is no man who can compete with me. I have descended as King Pandraka, taking compassion on the distressed conditioned souls out of my unlimited causeless mercy. You have falsely taken the position of Vasudeva without authority, but you should not propagate this false idea. You must give up your position. O descendant of the Yadu dynasty, please give up all the symbols of Vasudeva, which you have falsely assumed, and after giving up this position, come and surrender unto me. If, out of your gross impudence, you do not care for my words, then I challenge you to a fight. I'm inviting you to a battle in which the decision will be settled. When all the members of the royal assembly, including King Ugrasen, heard this message sent by Pandraka, they laughed very loudly for a considerable time. After enjoying the loud laughter of all the members of the assembly, Krishna replied to the messenger as follows. Okay, first, we are going to read about the laughter of the Lord, which is described in the third canto. When Kapila is teaching his mother how to meditate on the Supreme Lord, goes through a whole description, start at the feet, and there's a description of the feet and the ankles and the thighs and the chest, and finally you arrive at the face, and then you meditate on his smiling. Then, so this is third canto, chapter 28, text 33. With devotion, steeped in love and affection, the yogi should meditate within the core of his heart upon the laughter of Lord Vishnu. The laughter of Vishnu is so captivating that it can be easily meditated upon. When the Supreme Lord is laughing, one can see his small teeth, which resemble jasmine buds, rendered rosy by the splendor of his lips. Once devoting his mind to this, the yogi should no longer desire to see anything else. Okay, so now he can meditate on Krishna's laughter, which is even better than Vishnu's laughter. So I'll read that sentence again. When all the members of the royal assembly, including King Ugrasena, heard this message sent by Pandraka, they laughed very loudly for a considerable time. After enjoying the loud laughter of all the members of the assembly, Krishna replied to the messenger as follows. O messenger of Pundraka, you may carry my message to your master. He is a foolish rascal. I directly call him a rascal, and I refuse to follow his instructions. I shall never give up the symbols of Vasudev, especially my disc. I shall use this disc to kill not only Pundraka, but all his followers also. I shall destroy this Pundraka and his foolish associates, who merely constitute a society of cheaters and cheated. When this action is taken, foolish king, you will have to conceal your face in disgrace. And when your head is severed from your body by my disc, it will be surrounded by meat-eating birds like vultures, hawks, and eagles. At that time, instead of becoming my shelter, as you have demanded, you will be subjected to the mercy of these low-born birds. At that time, your body will be thrown to the dogs, who will eat it with great pleasure. That's a disturbing visualization. And so this little, I will kill not only King Pundraka, but all his followers also. I shall destroy this Pundraka and his foolish associates, who merely constitute a society of cheaters and cheated. So this phrase, cheaters and cheated, I got a little insight into that. Somebody sent me something, which is from an article written by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The article is entitled Thakur Bhaktivinoda. It was in The Harmonist, December 1931. Quote, these dupes like duplicity, these dupes have their admiring under-dupes. But the mutual admiration society of dupes does not escape by the mere weight of their number, the misfortunes due to the deliberate pursuit of the wrong course in accordance with the suggestions of our lower selves. Kind of need to read it a few times to follow. Should I read it again?
Yeah.
Okay. These dupes have their admiring under dupes, but the mutual admiration society of dupes does not escape by the mere weight of their number, the misfortunes due to the deliberate pursuit of the wrong course in accordance with the suggestions of our lower selves. It's really complex. That's just one sentence. Or no, that was two sentences, but... okay. So, moving on. The messenger carried the words of Lord Krishna to his master, Pundraka, that poor messenger, who patiently heard all these insults. Without waiting longer, Lord Sri Krishna immediately started out on his chariot to punish the rascal Pundraka. Because at that time the king of Karusha was living with his friend the king of Kashi, Krishna surrounded the whole city of Kashi. King Pundraka was a great warrior, and as soon as he heard of Krishna's attack, he came out of the city along with two Akshohini divisions of soldiers. The king of Kashi was also a friend to King Pundraka, and he came out with three Akshohini divisions. So five Akshohinis. Anybody know offhand how many in an Akshohini? Anyway, it's
a lot.
A lot, yeah. Millions, maybe. So five Akshohinis came out to fight. So when Krishna went out to fight, when he was attacked by Jarasandha, he went out. He told Balaram, you stay here, I'll go out and fight him. Wasn't that how it went? He fought them all single-handed, or did he? He didn't even bother taking an army out. Am I getting this wrong? I kind of remember some scene where Krishna went out and fought several Akshohinis just by himself, and it was a bloodbath with rivers of blood and elephants looking like islands. Okay, when the two kings came before Lord Krishna to oppose him, Krishna saw Pondraka face to face for the first time. Okay, now you get to meditate on the laughter of the Lord again, desiring not to think of anything else. Krishna saw that Pondraka had decorated himself with the symbols of the conch shell, disc, lotus, and club. He carried the Sharanga bow, and on his chest was the insignia of Sri Vatsa. His neck was decorated with a false Kasuba jewel, and he wore a flower garland in exact imitation of Lord Vasudev. He was dressed in yellow-colored silken garments, and the flag on his chariot carried the symbol of Garuda, exactly imitating Krishna's. He had a very valuable helmet on his head, and his earrings, like swordfish, glittered brilliantly. Does it say something different in yours? Swordfish? Are you following them?
Okay.
Yeah, it's usually it's sharks, but okay. Okay. Yeah. Glittered brilliantly. On the whole, however, his dress and makeup were clearly imitation. Anyone could understand that he was just like someone on stage playing the part of Vasudev in false dress. Okay, but even that looks beautiful when you see someone on stage dressed like Krishna. That looks pretty cool. But clearly you could see this is the imitation. When Lord Sri Krishna saw Pondraka imitating his posture and dress, he could not check his laughter, and thus he laughed with great satisfaction. All right, the battle happens, and they throw all kinds. Yeah, we're running out of time. Let's see. At this time, Krishna told Pondraka, "You requested me to give up the symbols of Lord Vishnu, specifically my disc. Now I will give it up to you. Be careful. You falsely declare yourself to be Vasudev, imitating myself. Therefore, no one is a greater fool than you. Now, Pondraka, I shall force you to give up this false representation. You wanted me to surrender to you. Now this is your opportunity. We shall now fight, and if I am defeated and you become victorious, I shall certainly surrender unto you." Then Krishna smashed Pondraka's chariot to pieces by shooting an arrow. With the help of his disc, he separated the head of Pondraka from his body, just as Indra shaves off the peaks of mountains by striking them with his thunderbolt. Similarly, he also killed the king of Kashi with his arrows. Lord Krishna specifically arranged to throw the head of the king of Kashi into the city of Kashi itself so that his relatives and family members could see it. This was done by Krishna, just as a hurricane carries a lotus petal here and there. Lord Krishna killed Pondraka and his friend Kashiraj on the battlefield, and then he returned to his capital city, Dwarka. So in the Bhagavatam, Vishwanath's commentary on the king of Kashi, it said that when they were preparing for the battle, king of Kashi was bragging, "I'm going to bring back Krishna's head." And then all of Kashiraj's wives, the queens, were all bragging, he's going to bring back the head of Krishna. So they're all dancing and excited about it and bragging. And so, let's see, does it go into detail here? Yes, it does. Okay, everybody likes this gruesome stuff. When the head of the king of Kashi was thrown through the city gate, people gathered and were astonished to see that wonderful thing. When they found out that there were earrings on it, they could understand that it was someone's head. They conjectured as to whose head it might be. Some thought it was Krishna's head because Krishna was the enemy of Kashiraj, and they calculated that the king of Kashi might have thrown Krishna's head into the city so that the people might take pleasure that the enemy was killed. But it was finally detected that the head was not Krishna's, but that of Kashiraj himself. When it was so ascertained, the queens of the king of Kashi immediately approached and began to lament the death of their husband. "My dear Lord," they cried, "upon your death, we have become just like dead bodies." then the sons of Kashiraj got together. The oldest one took a vow, I'm going to kill Krishna. I'm going to avenge the death. So it just gets worse. Gets worse and worse. We have a few minutes left, so I should leave some time open. Are there any? Yes. I couldn't hear you.
He says class usually ends at 8:45.
What?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
We usually don't see that.
The discussion after.
Oh. Stop at 8:45, then discuss. Got it. All right. I'll do that next time. So anything come in?
Mother Leela Padma is saying one Akshahini is 218,700 warriors.
Wow.
And Pran Govinda Prabhu said Bivina Nangsa means one can come under Maya or Yoga Maya by choice. The Lord or his Amsa means Vishnu Tattva never comes under Maya.
Thank you. What was the number in the Akshahini?
218,700.
218,700. 218,000 soldiers times 5. 1 million.
Just an example of what you said about how the Lord's pastimes are none different from him. I remember this particular pastime of Pondraka came to me when I was on Sankirtan at a stoplight Sankirtan near Annapolis, Maryland. We were doing stoplights, and while doing that, we had just read previously going out this pastime. And so the laughter of the assembly, Prabhupada directly challenging Pondraka, and then Krishna laughing. They were fresh in my mind when I was on Sankirtan, and now hearing this, you read this again, that same experience I had on Sankirtan, having listening to the pastime being narrated. So thank you.
Thank you. Shesha working at traffic light in where?
Annapolis.
So, Parikshit wants to know about the duration of the ages and the incarnations and so forth. It's stated that Kaliyuga is 472,000 years, Kaliyuga. But also it's stated at the same time it's 1,000 celestial years, which means that's 360,000 human years. So if it's 360,000 human years, why it said it's 432,000 human years? Why it's like that?
Obviously you know more about this than I do.
Anyhow, it's a thought for the next class.
Okay. Anything else? Yes, Professor.
Yeah, it's, you know, you think of Pondraka, I remember reading Krishna book, I guess it was the first edition, and I get a picture of him, it looks like a nut, you know? You know, and the way he's acting, he's like some drug-addled street person, like hallucinating, he's somebody else, you know? I mean, even if he thought he was Donald Trump or something, it'd just be like nutty, you know? And yet here he is, he was a big-time operator. It says here he's a great warrior, he's managing all these Akshahinis. Yeah, he looks a little, you know, he looks like some guy who didn't get the part in the play. You know, that's, you know, and that's how he's described. It's like, wow, it's, how do you, curious. I mean, because he was a very worldly guy. He was ruling the kingdom was, I guess you can go crazy, man. I, you know, to get envious or something. No, but even then, he was, you know, I would think he was, but it's just insane thinking that you're somebody else, whether it's Krishna, you know, and here he is, he's got a whole kingdom buying into it, and he's managing all his armies. I don't know, I guess you got to be careful.
Yeah. Well, in here, let's see, where did it go?
And I'm gone.
He gets Sarupya Mukti because he's always thinking of Krishna's form. And then he was purified by being killed by Krishna. where did that go? I lost the chapter. So what was your question specifically? Was there, like, who is he?
An impression he's just some loser who didn't get the part in the play.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just hallucinating. But he, you know, he was a very worldly expert. It says he was a great warrior, so it wasn't like he just had a couple of fist fights in the playground. You know, he'd won many battles. I mean, it requires a lot of intelligence.
He had Akshohinis of soldiers.
Yeah,
to manage that, fight for him.
Even if they never fought a battle, just to manage it.
Yes.
And yet here he is, just a nut.
Yes.
I guess you got to be careful. I don't know. I'm kind of just a comment, I guess.
Yes. So it's good to appreciate the power of, if you're in a battle with someone, to underestimate their power. That's a big mistake. And yes?
So he definitely required intelligence to manage what he did, but because of his lust, after, you know, prestige, whatever, and his envy, his lust steals away the intelligence.
Yes, he had influence, he had power, but he was misusing it, was misdirected. Mostly it's the intention. All right, thank you very much, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.